Hello and welcome, friends, to another edition of Sustainability Now with me, Justin Maugg, right here on your community radio station, Forward Radio, WFMP LP Louisville. We broadcast here in the historic Hayburn Building at 106.5 FM, and we live stream to the world at forwardradio.org. And we want you to become a part of this community radio station. You know, we really built this thing for you to be a megaphone for those voices in our community that are not being heard on the mainstream media, that are underrepresented in all those other forms of media you find out there. So if you want to get on these microphones, go to forwardradio.org and click on participate. And the microphones only stay on because of you. And we need your financial support to stay on air. We couldn't do it without you, but it's amazingly affordable. At $20 a day, if we all chip in, we can keep this great community resource broadcasting 24/7. All you got to do is go to forwardradio.org, click on donate, and become a member of our community radio station. Well, what we do each week here on Sustainability Now is we bring in folks from around the community who are doing that good work of thoughtful thinking. How do we not just pay attention to our environmental impact, but our social and our economic one as well? How do we create that better future for everyone? And certainly when we talk about that, there's no question that identity and who is American is playing a huge role in our conversation right now. And that's why I'm excited to bring into the studio with me a couple folks from an organization called Define American. And we're going to dive deep into that today. I've got in the studio with me Ryan Eller. Hey, Ryan.
Hey.
Ryan is Executive Director of Define American, and Holden Dillman's here. He's a Summit Field Organizer. Hey, Holden.
Howdy, howdy.
Great to have you both here in the studio with me. Define American, if people want to play along at home, they can learn about the organization at defineamerican.com. But please, define for us, what is Define American?
So Define American was founded back in 2011, the day that a Pulitzer Prize-winning, now Emmy-nominated journalist and filmmaker named Jose Antonio Vargas came out for the second time in his life, this time as an undocumented American.
Yes, I remember that.
Yeah, it was the number one news story globally, right? Actually, for over a week. And the three other co-founders were all journalists. And so it started really as a campaign to shift the conversation and transcend the politicalness of the immigration debate and get folks online to share their story about how they define American. And so Almost overnight, we became the largest online hub of immigrant-related and American identity-related stories. Huh. And since that time, we've really grown as an organization. We now have almost 70 chapters across the country, most on college campuses, some in high schools.
Wow.
And we've really led the narrative change work, both in Hollywood and in the news media, around how we talk about immigration, how we talk about race and identity in the United States.
Wow. Now, let's just pause and take a second to think about history here. 2011, this formed. Because I think everyone is so caught up in the post-Trump era, especially in like, oh, Trump came in and caused all this problems with immigration talk. But it's actually much deeper than that, right? We have had this problem for a long time.
It is. And, you know, right here in Louisville, we had some pretty bloody battles that were immigrant related. Catholics against Protestants, Irish against German immigrants.
Bloody Monday. Right?
Bloody Monday. Yeah, exactly.
Wow.
And, you know, in the late 1800s, about 88% of Louisville's entire population was first generation immigrant.
88%. Wow.
Yeah. And so, yeah, I mean, nationwide, this has been a conversation for some time. And I suggest, like my friend Jim Wallace, that America's first original sins were first, you know, the attempted genocide and continued cultural genocide of Native people.
That's right. That's
and then the second was enslavement of people from Africa. And around that time, in order for a few power brokers to maintain power, they really married legislatively and culturally American identity to whiteness. And we have been trying to, as the most diverse country in the world, we've been trying to unpack that ever since. And so this is a long-term thing. And it is easy in eras like this that are really tough, where our members at Define American are under consistent threat, under attack, being imprisoned and detained and deported, and even a few weeks ago in El Paso, killed. It's difficult for us sometimes to lose sight of that long-term lineage. When I first started with Define American, we were facing, you know, the biggest deportation numbers of any administration in history, and that was under the Obama administration.
Yeah, Deporter-in-chief, right?
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. So this is a deeply, deeply rooted problem, and we've never really gotten that good at defining American, have we? Like, it's amazing that so many centuries after the founding of this nation, we're still trying to figure it out.
Yeah, and we think the next few years in particular, this will be the central conversation. I mean, it's never been, at least in my lifetime, such a stark polarity between those who want to define American as, you know, some sort of white nationalist approach.
Yeah.
And going back to making America great in some era of, like, you know, segregation and whiteness versus those that want to choose the path of diversity and inclusion. And so it is a tough question. We think there's power in the question itself. The corollary that some of our chapter members have used that we're going to wrestle with at a summit that we're actually going to host here in Louisville in October is, what does an American look like?
Right.
Think that evokes really deep conversations. And where do we see Americans portrayed in our common media, in the reflection of our common experience in society?
Yeah. Wow. So tell me a little bit about y'all's history. How did you get involved with this organization? And Ryan, you've been talking a bunch, so why don't I just throw it over here to Holden. Go ahead and let us know how you got involved.
Yeah, so I was very much inspired by Define American's approach to the work. There's a lot of different ways of going about doing this transformative work, but through the storytelling and narrative, I feel like that's really the, in my own work as an aspiring social worker, I find that giving someone the autonomy to tell their own story, I think from there impacts a lot of different opportunities for organization and transformation. And so seeing Define American do that, not only within communities that they were, you know, integrating into and involved with, but also on a national level, understanding how is it that culture is created here in the United States, and understanding that media plays a really, really big part of that. And I think it's one of those things, taking that approach and understanding the importance and how we define American in media really is the step in the direction where I think we're going to see not only change, but large collective change as well.
Wow. Brian, how about you?
Holden and I are both a bit unique in that we're both from Appalachia.
Okay.
You know, and get asked all the time, what are two white guys from Appalachia doing at a immigration organization? And for me, it goes back to years ago when I was a faith-based community organizer, actually. I was doing interfaith work. And a friend of mine, Lee Hill, Lee at the time was at Riverside Church in New York. And we had a convention in Birmingham. And I brought a bunch of rural, mostly white, young people through the Civil Rights Museum. He brought communities of color through the Civil Rights Museum. And we had them join together in this experience. And we had a panel afterwards. And we're sitting right across the street from 16th Street Baptist Church, where a bombing had occurred during the Civil Rights era. And four young girls were murdered. And all around us in this park are statues of police officers and dogs and protesters. And we're sitting sort of amongst this scene. And of course, the first young person asked the question of these four pastors that had been doing work during civil rights, what was it like? And the first three pastors were white, and they all kind of said in one way or another, well, you know, it wasn't like what you just experienced in the Civil Rights Museum.
Wow.
We were learning about stuff every day on the news, just like everybody else. And then it got to the one black pastor on the panel, and he said, with all due respect to my well-meaning white brothers, this was an everyday thing for me. We had meetings every night at the church. My folks got shot at.
Wow.
And I realized in that moment that these white clergy were well-meaning.
Sure.
They believed in freedom and liberation, but they had missed the movement. And so I said at that time, if there's a movement in my lifetime, I don't want to miss the movement. And so when Jose Antonio Vargas and Jake Brewer, co-founders of Define American, asked me to come over from Change.org, where I was leading U.S. campaigns, and start Define American as an organization, not a campaign, I said, I don't want to miss this movement.
Yeah, wow, that's a great story. Wow. So I'm getting the sense here that it's a lot about storytelling and how stories are told, right? So tell us a little bit more about how Define American does that work of allowing stories to be told, providing a platform. I don't know. Tell me how it works.
We believe in storytelling really in every narrative form, and we're sort of form agnostic. So we have online storytelling.
Oh, cool.
But we also do in-person events with our chapters. Our U of L chapter is going to probably showcase some of that.
Oh, fantastic.
when we have a national convening later this fall. We also do storytelling, though, now through the news media.
Yeah.
We've got a big report coming out in about a week that is going to showcase, going back 5 years among the major news publications, how immigrants have been portrayed in the news media. We're publishing that with MIT.
Yeah, I was wondering if you're trying to monitor the media in a way. And
we are.
Data about that.
Yeah, and then we try to place local immigrant stories in the media, both nationally and locally. We've done so with Time Magazine on a number of occasions and pretty much every major publication, including television news. And we now have a wing. Our biggest office is actually in Los Angeles. So we worked on over 55 different television shows just in the past 2 years.
Wow.
Last year, those shows reached about 39 million people.
Wow.
And we will bring immigrants into writers' rooms so that they can share their story with writers. And those writers can include that in some of the storylines in scripted and non-scripted content in some of the TV shows that everybody here in the community watches every day.
Wow.
And even going down on like the community level, the thing that I know I respect the most about Define American is there's a role in the movement for everybody. It's one of those things, it seems to be an obvious question of how do you define American?
Right.
But it's not until you incorporate it in your daily conversations that you realize either people don't have a definition or the definition that automatically comes to mind that they're conditioned with is actually not what they believe in their daily lives. So, you know, wow. it's just like,
oh my gosh.
You ask them in a crowded room with all their friends, you know, and they're like, oh, this was the story I was taught. But when you're asked and it's right in your face, and then it's like, oh, this is the conversation we have to have.
Yeah.
And so even from the smallest to like someone you're passing, I love asking kids how you define American, to like elderly, to like everybody. Yeah. Everyone has a different story, and I think that's the power. We're not framing the conversation. We're just opening the space for it.
So you got me laughing because that really resonated with this idea of internalized racism. Like even people who are like really thoughtful and trying not to be racist still hold these racist ideas. And I guess the same thing can happen with sort of being exclusionary. Like we don't maybe even intentionally exclude, and yet we hold exclusionary ideas in our minds. That's crazy to me. What's the psychology of that? How can we do that?
Yeah. Well, there's a lot of psychology to it, actually. I mean, there's a lot of new social psychology research that talks about how human beings evolved and how tribalism evolved with us.
Yeah, we definitely hear that a lot, that we're just inherently tribal.
Yeah. And I think that what we're facing now in this newly globalistic society also challenges how broadly we can define our tribe, quote unquote.
Yeah.
And I mean, look, the last 2 years, we've had higher level of global migration than any time in human history.
Right.
The last two years, it's only
going to get worse with climate change.
That's
right?
Exactly right. And forced migration due to global climate change is higher now than it was during the enslavement of people from Africa.
Wow.
And so this is going to be a reality, and we're going to have to figure out as a society whether we're going to benefit from the contributions of the whole,
exactly.
of everybody, how we're going to treat one another, and how we're going to address this global challenge of climate change together.
Yeah.
And what is unique to America is that we are the only nation in the world that in our main harbor sits a statue that says, bring me your tired, your poor, your huddled masses. We were built on this idea of welcoming people, and so now in this new reality that we're going to be living in for the rest of our lives, we have to ask ourselves, what is our role? Can we still be the nation that welcomes people from everywhere and benefits, frankly, from all of the expertise and all that people bring to our community and our culture?
Great point. My guests today here on Sustainability Now are from Define American. You can learn more about the organization at defineamerican.com. You just heard from Ryan Eller, Executive Director of Define American, and I've got Holden Dillman up in here. He's the Summit Field Organizer. We're going to talk more about the October Summit in just a minute, but before we get there, I want to help people understand the organization a little bit better. So you mentioned earlier about the power of this very question and asking kids, asking elderly. So how do you facilitate this conversation? What are the ways that the organization tries to keep that conversation front and center?
Yeah, it depends on the setting, really, and where you reach someone on what we call our ladder of engagement. Sometimes it can happen at a restaurant or a bar or in a church pew, you know, or at a synagogue. And those one-on-one conversations, to Holden's point earlier, are sometimes the most rich because you can connect with people at their very heart level.
Yeah.
It's becoming more difficult as society polarizes and as we have less sort of common space outside of our coffee shops to really connect with people.
Right? Yeah. Good point.
And so we're now finding new methodologies technologies to reach folks and to engage, both building online conversations and online communities. So we use our online stories or what folks see in television, and we try to engage people online in that way, of course, through TV screens, through film, through the news media that they consume. And then there are other great events that we kind of tag on to and lend support to, like the Big Table is one I love.
That's
here
awesome.
In Louisville.
Yeah.
Trying to have the biggest potluck dinner in the world. And, you know, food is always a great way to bring people together. And the most, I would say that the most exciting thing that we have on the docket now is our exploration of comedy.
Yeah.
In a polarized society where difficult conversations about identity, race, and immigration, comedy can sometimes break through those barriers. And so we're working on developing a couple comedic television shows. We put out videos for our chapter members.
Oh, cool.
Like how to have a tough conversation with your racist uncle when you come home for Thanksgiving. And so we put those on our website. We try to provide those tools for our chapter members to bring some levity to an otherwise difficult conversation.
Yeah. And then, Holden, how are you having these conversations with kids and elderly? Where does that happen?
It's one of those things. One of my favorite things is our t-shirts, because it says Define American. So it's like, it's just very...
You're a walking question.
I'm a walking question. And I can honestly say I've never had a t-shirt that invited so much conversation, which I enjoy, obviously. But it's one of those things, too. I was wearing it recently, and I was flying, and it was like in an airport, you know. So, and it's one of those things people come up, and they're like, that's a confrontational or, like, you know, like very thought-provoking t-shirt you have on there. Do you want to talk about it? I'm like, of course I want to talk about it. But then I think the thing I love most is because of the dominant narrative, which is what we're trying to unpack and trying to shift here. People, especially as a presenting white man, people see me and they're like, they assume that it's going to be one that's exclusive.
Yeah.
And it's quite the opposite. And so I think seeing people trans, like in that one little bit of a conversation where I'm like, actually, we are trying to shift that narrative.
Yeah.
You know, I am not what an American looks like.
Yeah.
And so that's my favorite part, is like catching people, because they're like, you know, people like, they'll be like, oh, we're about to get in the thing. And I'm like, I'm on the inclusive side.
Yeah.
And that's what we're doing here. And so it's always funny to catch people on that.
Well, it's funny that people see it as confrontation, because I find it as like an invitation.
Mm-hmm.
It's inviting a dialogue. And it's so sad that in this day and age, that comes across as confrontational, right?
I get definitely different, but it was one of the, I think, especially in like an international space too, like
I was in
Europe and they're like, oh, wow.
Like, yeah, exactly. Well, I feel like it'd be a valuable thing to do, to just have this conversation, to model it right here. I'll ask you guys, how do you define American? I don't think it's a simple answer. Ryan, go ahead.
Yeah, it's not a simple answer, and I think that's one of the things that's been special about America.
Yeah.
I mean, the first thing I'll point out in our name is that the word American is not meant to be exclusionary to the United States.
Great.
Although we often
broaden it out
think
to the continent.
That it is.
Yeah.
We are a part of a larger continent, and America, as we know it now, hasn't always been America. My grandmother came from Puerto Rico, and it's a part of America, but still a part of our colonial past. And she, in every single way, was American, but probably today, if we still alive, would be told to go back to her country by some folk at the supermarket in the way that one of our colleagues was a few weeks ago. And so I define an American as someone, you know, personally who's pursuing freedom and liberty and the ideals that we've always tried to strive for in our country, even when we've fallen short. Someone who comes here to pursue that dream of being with their family, of contributing to the community, of the pursuit of happiness and freedom.
So what if you're born here? That's one thing we define as like, oh, Americans are born here, right? But you don't necessarily hold those common ideals. Like, there's nothing inherent, like, because I was born in the United States of America, therefore I believe everything America was founded on, right? How do we deal with that?
We have to wrestle with that, right? That's part of the power, I think, of our movement at Define American, is that we're trying to tell America's whole story.
Yes, yes.
And we have to wrestle with the fact that our most sacred documents, once called people of color three-fifths of a person, called Native...
The Grand Compromise.
Right? Yeah, called Native people savages.
Yeah,
right?
Definitely.
And that's
not
the irony of what we're doing now. There was an article a couple weeks ago in the National Review that was claiming that Define American, what we were trying to do is redefine it, and that wasn't right. And I would suggest we're not trying to redefine it. We're just trying to finally include everyone's voice in the conversation.
Yeah.
And a nation, a people, can only be defined by its people. And we have only been allowing some voices in the media, in common discourse, to do the defining. And now I think for us, the moment of reckoning is, can we truly include everybody in that discourse? Even those that we may ideologically have disagreement with.
Holden, how do you define American?
Yeah, it's one of those things, too. Once you get into it, there's no, like, there's never a simple, like, because that's the thing. The American identity is very complex. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of the harm that's been done historically is assuming that it's not complex and that it's not diverse. And I'm from Appalachia. My family's from Appalachia, a long line of coal miners. So it's just like, that's a part of my American identity. But it's interesting. You see different, you know, whether it be people who are socioeconomically oppressed or whatever, but it's just like, there's a lot of people in the, you know, this American dream that even those who fit the bill of American dream in practice, in actuality, they weren't given the opportunities. And so kind of going back to that same story of, I think, in my opinion, an American is someone who is seeking liberty, seeking freedom. And I think that's what makes America what it is. I mean, we have the Statue of Liberty. It's what we were founded on. And it's one of those things from the beginning, I think that's been what we've been striving for. Yeah. And we're seeing that now, that there is complexity to it.
Oh, yeah.
And it is like, I always love the, you know, America is a quilt. You know, it's a fabric. It's not one single color. It's not one single texture, not one experience.
Yeah.
Everything collectively kind of makes it what it is. And without engaging that, I think we really do compromise what America could be.
Right.
The success of it.
I loved what you said about not having the opportunity to even dream the American dream, because I was just having a conversation with a friend who's Bulgarian and is undergoing the naturalization process right now. Mm-hmm. And the most striking thing about the damn process, first of all, it takes so long, and even if you have, you're here, you can afford to get here, it's still so expensive to become American. Like, every step is another $1,000 you gotta spend, right? And I think there are people in America who believe that Americans are rich. Like,
yeah.
Poor people don't belong in America. Like, where did that idea come from?
Yeah, I mean, right in a country that still has 150 million poor people.
Yeah, if you're
and
on
I think
the
other tough reckoning that we have to challenge is this idea that citizenship allows someone to be treated as though they're fully American.
Yeah, that's a great point.
And
yeah.
That hasn't been the experience for a number of people, sadly. And I think we, you know, especially in communities like here in Louisville, Kentucky, we ultimately have a choice how we treat each other, how we treat our neighbors, how we treat newcomers.
Right.
And that is something that the government doesn't get to define for us. And we can choose to treat somebody with love and compassion and respect and like they're a true part of our community, because in every single way they are. Or we can go the other direction. And I think that's the conversation that hopefully, amidst the political polarization and the vitriol and the weaponization of language, we don't lose that sense of sort of localized common humanity.
Yeah. And this is really a locally relevant issue for folks here in Louisville. If they're not aware, we've been an immigrant landing ground for a long time, right? Talk a little bit about that local context here. Why is this an important issue here in Louisville?
Yeah, I mean, we're one of the, us and Bowling Green in our region, not just in our state, are one of the communities that has been the most welcoming to refugees in particular, really going back more than a decade. Most of our population growth, which has kept our tax base stable and churned our economy here in Louisville, is because of that influx of refugees. And that's now in question, unfortunately. But we have a number, a hugely growing population of Cuban residents here in Louisville. We've got a Cuban newspaper, even, and a bunch
Cantubano.
Of
Cantubano, yeah,
that's right.
That's cool.
And so, you know, we're also a food town and known nationally and even now internationally as a food town, and much of the evolution of the food scene locally, as it has been in other communities, is because of immigration and these fusions of brilliant cultural cuisines
that
come together to create something really beautiful. So that's really who we are. And of course, our most famous resident in Louisville, Muhammad Ali, comes from an immigrant family. His grandfather was an Irish immigrant. A lot of people don't know that, but his brother Rahman, the morning after Muhammad died, I was spending the morning with his brother, and he said, "Ryan, you know, you and I are cousins." And I said, "Well, Rock, I don't know that we're cousins." And he said, "No, you've got some Irish, don't you?" And I said, "Yes, a little bit." And he said, "One morning I'll never forget, sitting on the front porch, Muhammad and I looked at my grandfather and we said, 'Granddaddy, are you white?'" And he kind of leaned back in his chair and he said, "No, boys, I guess I'm not white." And there's this great book called How the Irish Became White. And at that time, it was a matter of how he was treated, not just the skin tone and his racial background. And so a lot of folks forget that the Ali family and the Muhammad Ali Center is really about diversity and inclusion and has been on the front of immigration conversations, not just because they want to be inclusive, but because that the family also, like many of our families, come from immigrant roots.
My guests today here on Sustainability Now are from Define American. You can learn more about the organization at defineamerican.com. We've got the executive director, Ryan Eller, and we've got summit field organizer, Holden Dillman. So let's get to the summit in our last few 15 minutes here. We are going to host here in Louisville the inaugural Define American Summit, Thursday, October 10th through Sunday, October 13th. You mentioned the Ali Center. That's where the opening night is going to be on Thursday the 10th, and then the rest of it will be hosted at the Gall House, but U of L has a role in hosting too. Talk more about this summit and U of L's role.
Yeah, so we're very, very fortunate to have a DA chapter at the University of Louisville and multiple departments and schools at the university who are really excited to be able to be a part of this convening, which is the largest in our nation's history. And so it's really great because we not only get to work with the university, but also the students. And that's a huge part of Define American's approach to the work, is people that not only understand it, but are living in the movement. And so to be able to bring that on a local level and get people out into the, because it's not just about bringing people downtown, it's about getting people into our community.
Oh, yeah.
Understanding how that work has not only transformed individuals who reside in Louisville, but also the community as a whole.
Yeah.
And by not looking away from it, but actually looking it right in the eye and saying, this is an issue that we're all affected by. And we're going to have a united front. And
wow.
So I think that's exciting. We see that very much at the University of Louisville with their cultural center. And they host the DA chapter as well, and some also other organizations throughout the city.
Yeah, so how is the community, local community, going to be brought into the conference?
So that's actually, for me, the most exciting part of the summit. So for a few years now, the Define American chapters have been sending representatives from across the country to a convening, but it's been closed to just Define American chapter members. For the first time ever here in Louisville, we're opening it up to the general public.
Wow.
And one of the events that we're going to do that's open to the public is our Define American Comedy Night. So we've got
big
name comedians coming to the Millennium Center. We've got Thelonious Monk will be here.
Wow.
Who folks used to see on Comedy Central and is selling out shows. Zara Norbach from Good Muslim, Bad Muslim, who's got a new Netflix special coming out in just a few weeks, is going to be here. And a couple, we're partnering with Comedy Central, so there are a couple comedians that have yet to be announced.
Fun.
And folks can get their tickets at defineamerican.com/summit. That's what's so great about our University of Louisville chapter is that they're the first chapter in the state of Kentucky, and they chose to participate in a national competition to bring the summit here.
Oh,
so
cool.
Chapter leaders from across the country voted, and about a dozen different chapters that competed, they won the vote.
Wow.
And so we'll be welcoming at least 60, probably delegations, a few hundred students to add on to what we hope is a few hundred more community members that want to go to really compelling workshops. And, you know, it won't just be heavy academic learning. It will be that, but it'll also be a lot of fun. We're opening at the Muhammad Ali Center with a concert and some performances. The mayor will talk. And then we've got, you know, a few other notable folks that authors and speakers that I think are going to be pretty compelling.
Wow. Can you leak any of them yet? Any keynotes?
We've got a few that we can say. There are a few that we'll announce in the coming weeks. But Jose Antonio Vargas, our founder,
will
be here. It'll be just a few weeks after the release of his paperback book, Dear America, Notes from an Undocumented Citizen.
Fantastic.
So Jose will be here. The mayor, Mayor Fisher, will be speaking at the Ali Center. And in addition to the comedians that I mentioned, Jen Budd, who is now gaining a lot of notoriety, has recently recently been on MSNBC a few times, in the Washington Post, USA Today. She's a former Border Patrol officer who now has dedicated her life to the immigrant justice movement. So she'll be here. And we've got a few other names that I think will be really compelling and cool. A lot of fun for folks.
All right. So who should attend this thing? I mean, your press says that it's for, you know, media makers, new Americans, activists. Is it for everybody, or who do you think is the ideal target here?
That's a great question.
Yeah, I think it's one of those things, just like our approach to who is an American, we're sending out that wide net with. Because I think the reason why I was excited to work in the community as a part of, you know, promoting and getting people at the summit is the fact that everyone has a space at the table.
Right.
No one doesn't. And so really making sure that everyone feels welcome.
Yeah.
Because everyone does have something to contribute. If you're here in the U.S., then you have something to add. And so kind of having the mentality of, like, we're not trying to because so many great organizations here in Louisville are already engaging with very diverse populations.
Sure.
And so one of my goals for myself is to make sure that we can celebrate the work that's already being done here.
Yeah.
And so with that, I've been reaching out in different ways, whether it be programming, or we're going to have like an exhibition space, just kind of like celebrate all the work that community organizations are doing. And that's kind of like what I'm working on right now, like going to different organizations, talking about what we're doing. And if anyone out there is hearing this and you would like to have a space at the table, we want to make sure that you have that. So you can feel free to email me at Holden, H-O-L-D-E-N, @defineamerican.com, and I'm so happy to have that conversation.
That's great. How else are you making it welcoming? Are there things like scholarships? Is there anything like, you say new Americans, I imagine there's going to be many people here with English as a second language. Will there be translation services or anything like that?
We'll have some services that are translation for sure. We do have scholarships for chapter leaders, and they've been applying for those scholarships thanks to some sponsors like American Airlines, who traditionally helps us get folks.
Yeah, they better
define
American for crying out loud.
That's right. That's right. I'll also say, you know, this is a bit of a rare conference in that it's not just for the already woke, it's for the still waking.
Right.
And
or even those of us who think we're woke, like I said, like it's so internalized we don't even realize.
Yeah, and we've got a lot to unpack. I mean, look, the anti-immigrant hate groups are now larger and more prominent than ever, and they were founded and still remain by environmental activists. And so we've got a lot of reconciling work to do. We've got a lot to combine movements between criminal justice and immigrant freedom, and a lot of difficult conversations to unpack. And so that's why we try to create a welcoming space.
Yeah.
You know, I will leak exclusively here that we haven't announced yet, but we're going to have an Orange is the New Black panel. We've got a couple folks from Orange is the New Black that will be there.
Cool.
And that brings up a lot of different conversations just from folks who are fans of the show that want to come and maybe meet some of the actors on the show, but dig into those conversations.
Mass incarceration. Yeah.
So I think everybody who is interested in being just a little bit uncomfortable, but learning and being in dialogue is going to really enjoy this conversation. If you like good food and hanging out with people who are different than you, even better.
Very good. Now, this is the inaugural summit, right? You all have never put on anything like this before.
It is, yeah. So we are combining really two of our events into one for this. So Define American for the past 3 years has had separate chapter summit where just our chapter leaders would come together. And then we've had an annual Define American Film Festival.
Oh, okay.
And what we're doing this year is combining it into sort of one cultural event where during the day there'll be workshops, and then in the evenings we'll have cultural offerings.
So some films
throughout the community. There probably will be some films. We're going to definitely show some shorts.
Yeah, cool. I love shorts.
At the summit itself. And there's a film festival happening here in town anyway.
Yeah.
A number of our guests are going to be going to that weekend. And then we're now expanding it to other forms of the arts. So there'll be visual arts.
Ooh.
We're partnering with the local arts council even on potentially doing some murals here in the community to go along with this theme of how do you define American.
Yeah. Well, the reason I asked about the experience with this is I'm curious about potential pushback because I participated in the White Privilege Conference several years ago that was here in Louisville, and so the hate groups came out for that. I'm wondering if it's already starting or what your concerns are or how you're going to address it.
Well, we've done over 1,000 events in the last 5 years. and we have varying degrees of pushback wherever we go, and a sense of welcome. We really lean in to that, underscoring how necessary this dialogue is we know it's uncomfortable, but it's also something that we have to wrestle with. And, you know, we take measures to make sure as much as possible that everyone is safe and included and welcome. You know, we have people from every status and background that will be attending these events, and we try to make it as accommodating and comfortable for them as we possibly can. But we also realize that there are folks who wish to define American in a very different way. And I think, you know, that's the reality of the time that we live in. And so ignoring it is no longer an option.
Yes, that's true. Maybe we've ignored it for too long. I mean, some people would say that we should have addressed these white nationalist groups, you know, in the Obama era when they were sort of underground more and not welcomed by our leadership, right? Because it's always been an issue in our country, right? And if we ignore it and assume it's not there, we can't really get to the root of the problem, right?
Yeah, and I think people have a choice. You know, they can come out, be a part of community. They can try to wrestle to be the inclusive, welcoming, prosperous place that I think the overwhelming majority of us want to be. Mm. Or they can sort of stay away and let let cultural levers be pulled in one direction or another. And I think many folks, I talked to my father as a Southern historian a lot, kind of felt like after the Civil Rights era, white nationalism had been defeated. And like those of us who believe in freedom and liberty and are part of movement spaces for progress, if we're defeated, we don't just go away.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I think that was what we forgot in the 60s, that they didn't just go away, that they instead married themselves to this wicked narrative of anti-Semitism and this lie of sort of white genocide and invasion of people of color. And it's all a lie, and it's killing all of us, even those of us who aren't free totally in our identity as white folk. But they didn't go away, and I think we have to reckon with them now because we haven't in the past, and we haven't really done a truth-telling and reconciliation effort. And that's what we're trying to spark little by little, TV show by TV show, event by event at Define American. Mm-hmm. And that's why I think it'll be a pretty profound thing to have the Define American Summit here in Louisville, a place that not only is incredibly diverse, but where our heritage and history is of being a place of immigrants, a place of pushing boundaries of American identity in a very bold, in the sort of Ali-esque, bold ego way of saying, I am here, I am beautiful, you know, you have to reckon with me. And we hope that people will have to reckon with Louisville being a compassionate and welcoming city where everybody belongs. And I think Louisville is going to welcome folk from all across the country and show them just how inclusive we are from October 10th through the 13th.
That's awesome. Get your tickets now. DefineAmerican.com/summit is the place to go. Any last things you want to say in our last minute together to recommend the summit? Or
so one thing I'd definitely like to mention is we really are committed to having like everyone at the table. And so that's one of the privileges as being the field or summit field organizer. So if you go onto the website and you're going to get your ticket and something comes up, whether you're an individual, a community org, or an instructor, a teacher, you want to bring a class, we have different things set up where we can make sure we can meet you where you're at, basically. And if you don't feel like where it's at when you're approaching it, if it pushes you back, don't let that discourage you. Reach out to us, and we're happy to meet you where you're at. So one of the things that we're doing, which I'm really excited about, is instructors from the high school level to the collegiate level, if you incorporate it in your semester curriculum and offer extra credit, we're able to offer free admission to those students.
Awesome.
And so it's just one of those ways of we understand that to be a part of it is a part of the change making. And so we want to make sure that's accessible for folks. So once again, reach out to Holden at DefineAmerican.com and we can make sure that you have a space at the table.
That's great. Keep that in mind, teachers and instructors. Well, we're all out of time. Thank you so much, Ryan Eller.
Thank you.
And thank you, Holden Dillman, for coming in today.
Thank you.
All right. Check them out, DefineAmerican.com. And stay tuned, my friends. Coming up in just a minute here on Sustainability Now, your weekly action calendar. We got a bunch of events happening just this week to get you involved in sustainability. So stay tuned, my friends. with the sweet, sweet sounds of Appalachian behind me now, and many thanks to them for giving us permission to use their great local music on the podcast SoundCloud edition of our programs here on Forward Radio. You can learn more about them at appalachian.com. You're listening to Sustainability Now with me, Justin Maugg, and now's the time on the show where we get out our pencils sharpened, get our calendars out, and get ready to take action for sustainability this week. First of all, though, I want to really thank everybody who last week stepped up to the plate on Thursday for Give for Good Louisville. We were so thrilled with all of our donors. Man, it was such a great day. The live broadcast that we got to do, and just to be there in the station as donations were rolling in. Thank you so much to our 47 donors who gave to us last Thursday during Give for Good Louisville. Helped us reach 89% of our goal. We raised $3,100 on that day, and thank you so much to everyone who chipped in to help keep us sustained and on the air for another year. You guys are the best. All right, let's look at our calendar this week. This week, there are reasons to take action, and it all starts on Tuesday, September 17th, with the continuation of the cover crop seed giveaways and garden cleanups. You can come learn from master gardeners what you need to do in the fall to have a disease-free and healthy garden for the next growing season. Yet, now is the time to start thinking about next year's crops and to get yourself some cover crops for the winter. And there are three more opportunities to do that coming up on Tuesday, September 17th, 5:30 to 7:30. They'll be out at the 7th Street Community Garden. They're at 3215 South 7th Street Road. And on Wednesday morning, the 18th, from 9 a.m. to 11 a.m., they'll be out at the Farnsley Mormon Community Garden at Riverside, 7410 Mormon Road. And finally, Friday, October 4th, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. at the Limerick Community Garden at 6th and Garland Avenue. More information can be found about this at facebook.com/Louisville Community Gardens. Also coming up Tuesday, but in the evening, Tuesday at 7 p.m., it is the Greater Louisville Sierra Club's monthly program. This week, you don't want to miss it. It is on the Appalachian Storage Hub. It takes place 7 p.m. at the United Crescent Hill Ministries at Frankfort Avenue there at State Street. And this week's guest speaker will be one of my former guests, Alice Melendez and Deanna Rushing, members of a new Kentucky Extinction Rebellion group that you heard about here on this program. They'll be briefing us on this new and scary threat to the ecological integrity of the Appalachian region and the entire Ohio River Valley. The hub would store natural gas liquids underground to supply five proposed cracker petrochemical plants. These plants manufacture plastic pellets, like we need more of those, that are transformed into a variety of plastic products, like we need more of that. Our presenters will discuss the politics, the process, the funding, the engineering, and economics of the proposed development. They'll also advise us about the predicted air, water, and climate impacts, and how we can fight and become a wrench in the gears of this so-called progress. So that's coming up Tuesday the 17th, 7 to 8:30 p.m. at the United Crescent Hill Ministries at Frankfort Avenue there at State Street. More information is at LouisvilleSierraClub.org. Now, as you've heard on this program, Bernheim Forest is under threat, and they are doing, as promised, a road show, so you can come learn about it in person and have your questions answered. As you've probably heard, two separate projects, an LG&E natural gas pipeline and a proposed Interstate 65 to 71 regional connector, the next Gene Snyder, so-called, threaten the integrity of our beloved Bernheim Forest. This potential seizure of our pristine conservation land ignores the easements put in place to protect our biologically diverse land. These threats will have an irreversible impact on our wildlife, our clean air and water, our visitors, and the quality of life in our community. And now, in order to eliminate these threats, we need to demonstrate that we have a strong community of supporters. This means that they need you and your friends and your friends' friends to come along and help out with this. Bernheim is thus conducting a Bernheim Under Threat Roadshow dedicated to educating the citizens of our community about the threats faced by the forest and how our community can take immediate action to save it. More information is available at Bernheim.org. But here's the schedule. a full schedule for the roadshow so far. Coming up this Tuesday, the 17th, they'll be at the Thomas Jefferson Unitarian Church, 4936 Brownsboro Road, at 6:30 p.m. And that's an hour-long program. On Wednesday, the 18th, at 6 p.m., they'll be at Quest Outdoors for a couple hours at 4600 Shelbyville Road. On Thursday, the 19th, from 7 to 9 p.m., they'll be at St. Paul United Methodist Church, 2000 Douglas Boulevard. They'll be out at the Forest, Bernheim Forest, this Saturday, September 21st, from 10 a.m. to 11:30 a.m. with the Road Show. And then next week, Tuesday the 24th at 6:30 p.m., they'll be in Bardstown, Kentucky at the Sisters of Charity of Nazareth. And on Wednesday the 25th, they'll be at Carmichael's Bookstore, 2720 Frankfort Avenue at 7 p.m. And finally, Thursday, September 26th at 4 to 6 p.m., they'll be at the Elizabethtown Community and Technical College down in Elizabethtown, Kentucky. Again, more information and the full schedule on the Threats Forest Under Threat Community Roadshow is at bernheim.org. And there's also some really easy links for taking action there. Coming up this Wednesday, September 18th, it is the Belknap Campus Farmers Market at UofL, the Fall Farmers Market, a one-day-only market from 10:30 a.m. to 2 p.m., right at the clock tower in the heart of campus outside of the Red Barn. The Belknap Campus Farmers Market will be returning for this one day only during the fall. You can stop by for farm-fresh local products, including produce, eggs, baked goods, honey, ice cream, coffee, and more. They'll be highlighting sustainable resources on campus as well. Vendors are going to include Berserker Brew Coffee, Bernoulli's Ice Cream, Rogue Petunia Bakery, Low Creek Farms, Bar Farms, Full Heart Farms, the UofL Free Store, and UofL Health Promotion. More information is available at louisville.edu/sustainability, but we hope to see you this Wednesday the 18th, 10:30 a.m. to 2 p.m., right beneath the clock tower in the heart of campus. Coming up on Thursday, the 19th, it is the third Thursday lunch presented by our sponsoring organization, the Fellowship of Reconciliation, along with Sowers of Justice Network. The featured speaker this Thursday, the 19th, is Doug Lowry, speaking on Fork University. Third Thursday lunches take place at the Hotel Louisville, 120 West Broadway, there at 2nd and Broadway. A full buffet lunch is served at 11:30 with presentations beginning at noon. If you want the lunch, it's just $7 at the door. And Fork University showcases the dynamics of food justice and ways to create systemic change by engaging government, community organizations, local businesses, farm communities, and consumers. Doug Lowry will tell us how long-term sustainable policies can create a healthy, vibrant food system that invites innovative solutions to improve public health, local economic development, and harmony with nature. You'll learn how advocacy and direct action can drive common community practices to make food systems more equitable, just, and sustainable. Passionate about justice and human need, Doug Lowry has worked as a community activist for labor unions, LGBTQ efforts, anti-racism work, food security, and sustainability. He's a board member of the Sowers of Justice Network, the Louisville Community Grocery, the Food in Neighborhoods Community Coalition, Seafair, and the West Louisville Dream Team. And he'll be speaking at the third Thursday lunch this Thursday, the 19th at noon, at Hotel Louisville. More information is at louisvillefor.org. Also coming up on Thursday the 19th, in a little bit later in the afternoon at 4:30 to 6:30 p.m., it's the UofL's Ann Braden Institute for Social Justice Research and the Cooperative Consortium for Transdisciplinary Social Justice Research. They're co-hosting a fall open house. It's at UofL's Ekstrom Library, room 280 and 258. It's a tour of the Institute's social justice art and history resources. Begins at 5:30 p.m., but refreshments will be provided and folks will be there for meeting and greeting and talking about the social justice research work they do and how the community can get more involved and take advantage of these resources. More information is at louisville.edu/Braden, B-R-A-D-E-N. But you can just come on out Thursday the 19th, 4:30 to 6:30 p.m. in UofL's main Ekstrom Library up on the second floor, room 280 and 258. Also Thursday at 5:30 to 7 p.m., it's the Urban Agriculture Coalition meeting taking place on the 19th at 2234 West Market Street. You can come get plugged in to Louisville's food and agriculture scene by attending a meeting of Forward Radio's community partner, the Urban Ag Coalition. The coalition meets monthly to collaborate on projects that support agriculture across our city. You can contact Urban Ag Conservationist at gmail.com for more information or to get on the email list. And you can learn more about the coalition at foodinneighborhoods.org/grow. But you can just come on out this Thursday the 19th, 5:30 to 7 p.m. at 2234 West Market Street. And finally, no, a couple more events on Thursday. Thursday, September 19th at 6 p.m., also at U of L at the Red Barn. It's an event called The Cost of a Vote, Women's Suffrage 100 Years Later and Beyond, hosted by U of L's Women's Center and the American Association of University Women at U of L. You can join us for a critical conversation as we explore the history of the U.S. and Louisville's suffrage movement, those who've been left out, specifically women of color, and who still faces barriers to voting today, including trans women, incarcerated women, Native American women, and more. This event is part of the Engage Lead Serve Board's Civic Engagement Week with many co-sponsors. And you can get more information about it at events.louisville.edu. But everyone's welcome Thursday the 19th, 6 to 8 p.m. in the Red Barn right by the clock tower there in the heart of U of L's campus. And finally, Thursday the 19th at 6 p.m., you can also go to the Kentucky Interfaith Power and Lights Hope in Action Awards Dinner, taking place at St. Matthew's Episcopal Church, 330 North Hubbard's Lane. Kentucky Interfaith Power and Light will present their 9th annual Hope in Actions Award Dinner, and they will be celebrating congregations that have made sustainable improvements and sharing their success stories in hope of inspiring others to do the same. Bellarmine University's Rob Kingsolver will be the keynote speaker, along with Fernanda Scharfenberger and Scotty Monteith of the Sunrise Movement at this year's event. You'll hear from this year's Hope in Action Award winners and enjoy the music of John Gage. More information about this event on Thursday the 19th at 6 p.m. at St. Matthew's Episcopal Church on Hubbard's Lane is at kentuckyipl.org. Now, my friends, this Friday, September 20th, is the Global Climate Strike, and actions will be taken right here in Louisville. The heart of the action is from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. at Jefferson Square Park, 301 South 6th Street. This worldwide action is being led by students and youth, but is open to everyone, and it requires everyone, really. As has been happening for a year now, students and supportive adults plan to go on strike on September 20th and hold actions to demonstrate the urgency of the climate crisis. This will be a day of both protest and celebration, led by an awesome coalition of Kentucky youth, Extinction Rebellion of Kentucky, and many other local groups. Everyone is invited regardless of age. It kicks off at 10 a.m. with the coalition of local Kentucky youth, kicking off the day of the rally in the park at Jefferson Square Park, there at 6th and Jefferson. At noon, the Youth Coalition will join Extinction Rebellion members and other local environmental and climate activists of all ages to deliver the 10th in a series of monthly letters to the mayor across the street at Metro Hall. And then at 2 p.m., the Youth Coalition turns the park program over to Extinction Rebellion for more group activities and music, and there are I'll be there with a Forward Radio recording station to record for broadcast your voice and your perspectives on the global climate crisis. There'll be other workshops going on at Wells from 2 to 3:30. 4 p.m., the formal program ends and some unscheduled actions may occur, as discussed on this program last week. And then at 7 p.m., we'll be regrouping at Bardstown Road and Baxter Avenue to celebrate the day and the community. Everyone is encouraged to bring friends, children, reusable water containers, food, blankets, sunscreen, noisemakers, signs, flags, and banners. And everyone's encouraged to use public or self-powered transportation. Do not drive to the Global Climate Strike, my friends. That would really be defeating the purpose. More information about Friday, September 20th, Global Climate Strike, 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. at Jefferson Square Park is at xrebelky.org, and you can learn about the global movement at globalclimatestrike.net. Now, coming up this Saturday the 21st, it's the next in the Hal and Ben's Bike-In movie series in Olmsted Parks. You can hop on your bike and join us for this free community event hosted by Olmsted Parks Conservancy and produced by Ben Solee and Hal Riedling. And the next date is this Saturday, September 21st, and it's taking place at Victory Park. And the film that will be screened around dusk is Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse. You can plan to walk, bus, or ride your bike to each of these great neighborhood parks to enjoy live local music, food trucks, brew, games, and more. And it'll culminate with that family-friendly movie at dusk. But activities and music start at 5 p.m. And it is taking place at Victory Park this September 21st. More information is at olmstedparks.org. Or just come on by Victory Park this coming Saturday. Now, Sunday, there's several great events. Sunday the 22nd at 2 p.m., there'll be an opening reception about photographs of the Ohio River Voyager adventure taking place at Gallery Hertz there at 1253 South Preston. The public's invited for a free reception for a photography exhibit of shots taken during the 2019 Ohio River Recreation Trail Voyager Canoe Adventure. John Nation and Joe Wolick will be presenting. For the past 30 years, John worked as a photographer for the Louisville Magazine. He also worked as a freelance photographer during his time with the magazine and has been published regionally, nationally, and internationally. And originally from Louisville, Joe Wolick studied photography and conceptual art at San Francisco State University and the California Institute of Arts. In 1999, his artistic focus took a decided change after receiving a Durfee Foundation grant that allowed him an extensive excursion to China, Mongolia, and Siberia. And both of these great photographers will be sharing their photographs of this amazing Voyager canoe adventure down the Ohio River to launch the Ohio River Recreational Trail. It's free and open to the public as part of a Float, an Ohio River way of life. So you can get more information at louisvilleky.gov or facebook.com/rivercitypaddlesports. And Sunday, September 22nd, you can do both, because that one was at 2. From 3 to 5, you can head on over to the Earth and Spirit Center Barn, 1924 Newburgh Road, for a climate change grief tending, co-facilitated by licensed clinical social workers Parker Bowling and Jen Owens. Are you feeling anxious and sad about the impact of climate change? Are you angry at the continued inaction and apathy of people in power? Well, please join us for our first group gathering to process these feelings of grief in a supportive and spiritual space. Rooted in Joanna Macy's work that reconnects, we'll engage in practices and conversations that connect us to our world and each other in order to acknowledge the immense challenges of our time and move towards collective action rooted in our deep love for the world. No registration is required. Donations are welcome. For more information, you can email info@earthandspiritcenter.org or you can call 502-452-2749. And also Sunday evening, September 22nd from 5 to 8 p.m., it's the Bell of Louisville Bell Full of Knowledge Cruise, a float in Ohio River way of life, which I've already mentioned, is sponsoring this three-hour cruise on the Bell of Louisville, the oldest river steamboat in operation today. Built in 1914, the Bell was made a National Historic Landmark in 89, and the Bell Full of Knowledge is inspired by the 1825-26 boatload of knowledge keelboat trip of educators, artists, and scholars who were invited by William McClure to visit the utopian community of New Harmony, Indiana. Well, on Sunday, they're loading the Bell with a variety of scholars, artists, and performers who can tell about every aspect of Ohio River life and natural history. Informal one-on-one up-close and personal chats with the experts will be the order of the day, and food will be provided by the Bell's regular concessions. You can check afloat on theohio.com for more information and tickets about Sunday's Bell of Louisville Bell Full of Knowledge Cruise from 5 to 8 p.m. on the 22nd. And that's all the time we have for today. Stay tuned to Ford Radio. Lots of great stuff coming up, and I'll be back in your ears in 1 week's time.